So I would say outcome management is really becoming a key topic for organizations, because everybody says, and I also think that last year, 2 years of Corona made something there, that organizations were really readjusting for the last 2 years. And now, okay, now we need to implement. We are now in terms of implementing. We had our thoughts, how we handle the situation, how we go forward, and now we need to implement. And realizing that when you're adapting, and when you're adapting on a leadership level, how do we get people on board? How do we get people along the line that they have a good overview where you're heading and really engaging with the organization? And I think that's where we are at the moment, that leaders and organization realize that outcome management is key to be successful.
Welcome to another episode of the Major Outcomes Podcast. Today, we're talking with Felix von Held, and he's the founder and partner of the Institute for Innovation and Change Methodologies. Dr. Felix von Held has been working in more than 100 innovation and transformation projects in basically most industries over the last 15 years as a coach and a consultant. Before founding the IICM, Felix has worked in innovation management and strategy and strategic change management at the BMW Group. Since 2008, he has been teaching at the Center of Digital Technology Management, the CETM in Munich, something we have in common, as well as the ESB in Reutling and the University of Zurich. Felix, did I forget anything important? Welcome.
No, welcome, and thank you for having me on it.
Today we're going to talk about robust leadership, how you call it. Maybe before we go into that, what brought you to what you do today? You work in the context, as I just said, of leadership, of organization, of change and innovation. How did you end up doing what you do today?
Well, interestingly, when I started my studies in economics, I quite early found out that coming from a family of doctors, it brought me back to a human-centered view on organizations and on the whole topic, how they perform and how you could shape a better environment for people working together and how this is closely interlinked. So I was very much looking at creativity in organizations, meaning innovation, and this also brought me to change. Because obviously, if you do something new, something is changing, and something is changing, it's also about innovation. So this was something that was intrinsically interesting me, and also the what are methods, what are approaches that are helpful there. And on the other side, how can you can say, foster and facilitate the potential of human beings, of individuals, that we all as humans are striving for developing ourselves, but also as the organization as such. And this interest in working with organizations to develop this perspective is really something driving me today, especially as we see that environments of organizations are starting to change faster and faster, and there are so many impulses from the outside. So how can we help people to perform in this environment? How can we help people to develop there? So this is something I'm keenly interested in, and that's still driving me. And that's how I ended up with doing what we are doing today. Mm-hmm.
So with the Institute for Innovation and Change Methodologies, you do research. We're going to come to that in a moment. But you also work with companies. What kind of work do you do with what kind of businesses, with what kind of organizations?
So we're working with organizations in different industries, like the insurance, reinsurance business, automotive, pharma, banking, financial services. So you could say really different companies, because in the end, it's always about humans, right? So you could say, if you really reduce it, an organization is just what the employees are doing or not doing. So it's really about getting people engaged and involved, and all the processes and methodologies are just helping to align the energy of an organization in a certain direction. And this is also what our projects are typically about when we are engaging in organizations, like typically in units starting with a big team from 100 people until really big global organizations that we're working with a couple of thousands of people, really thinking about the what is needed basically to build up a good performing culture, thinking about identity, thinking about how people can work better together, especially if there's uncertainty, and really having this human aspect in mind. So where are the people at the moment and what do they need to take the next step? And this can be a strategy project where it's more about getting a sense of the environment that is out there and how robust is the strategy of the company, until the transfer to bring that to the single individual. So individual employee can say, so what's my part in the game? Which is also obviously a strong link to outcome management. So what is my part in the game and how do I see progress and then feel where I'm there? And then on the next part, it is obviously when you go forward, so how can we really, that would be classical change management. How can we think about the what are capabilities needed? Are the roles and profiles fitting to the way where you want to go? So if the working together there fit to the aim you're targeting. Mm-hmm.
And that's obviously our link. That's how we met and connected when this is about strategy and how to get strategy implemented. And most importantly, as you just said, in the context of outcome management, where we both work in, how do we connect people's individuals' goals and missions or team goals with the broader aims and targets of the company with a higher level strategy? That's how we initially met. So as our listeners can hear, it's quite an comprehensive approach, and you work in a variety of dimensions with the organizations you serve. Today, however, we want to go a little bit deeper into leadership and what you call robust leadership. You recently did a study on that. What made you interested in that topic of robust leadership? And maybe we can start with like defining what robust leadership is from your perspective and by your definition.
Thank you very much. Yes. So what perhaps like robust leadership, you could say when you look at organizations, it's really interesting if you look at uncertain environments and highly dynamic environments, that there are some organizations that are able to catch that as an opportunity, right? So you could look at the last years and seeing all the startups coming about and growing, and you could say, well, there were obviously already companies in the market. So what is differentiating is the ones that can really take the opportunity, and you could say, if you look at a sailing boat, takes the waves and the winds of change and what is happening and say, okay, it makes us even faster in comprehension to others. So we say robust leadership is about really building a robust organization. I always like the metaphor of a child on the playground, you know, falling down, standing up, trying out the toys that are there, and then again and again, getting up and getting faster and stronger and using that what is there. So what is basically the gist of it? If you look at robust leadership being an organization that has a higher performance in an uncertain or dynamic environment. So that's how we define it. We also talked about the wording resilience, but resilience was from our take on it too passive. It would be reacting, basically building resilience, building the capability to react. And we would say this robustness means being more proactive. So really using that and seeing that and sensing what's out there and really taking the opportunity or serendipity of what is out there to really go forward stronger. And that was really intriguing to us. So what makes this organization? You could also argue, you know, things like digitalization and climate change, where basically they are, I don't know, when we were back in school or university, yeah. Right? So is that really a new change? Probably not. Probably it's more about what is your capability to sense what is out there and the capability to adapt fast to the environment and use that as an opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. So I think there are two very important thoughts in it for me. On the one hand, yes, you can say none of these topics and trends are completely new, right? That's what, of course, our work at WorkPath is about and what we emphasize again and again. However, a little bit like climate change itself, I think organizations are so used to the way they are working and so used to that certain things in organizations just don't work. So sometimes I feel like that's the reason why there's a lack of urgency, right? It's just common sense. It's research says again and again, 70% to 80% of strategies and strategic projects do not get implemented the way they were intended. It just doesn't work. Yeah, but somehow we're so used to it. It's just the kind of normal we know. But now, in the last 5 to 10 years, I think you can see how businesses realize, okay, we cannot afford not reacting. And a little bit like climate change, now suddenly the pressure gets so big and the consequences get apparent. It gets less abstract. And from, I think, the topics we talk about here and what you call robust leadership has always been a organizational capability for success. But now you cannot really afford not thinking about it, not changing. And the second thought in your what you shared and why I really am grateful for your work there is that work on robust leadership, I think, emphasizes that it's not just about leadership and management in a existing system or, you know, squeezing a little bit more out of it or a little bit more efficiency there. It's really puts a spotlight on the fact that you need new organizational capabilities on the human side, on leaders and managers, but also in how the organization, how teams in general work. It's new skills, new capabilities, new, yes, but only in a second step, then also processes, methodologies. But I think that's something that's really cannot be emphasized too much. Why? I mean, you talked a little bit about why robust leadership is so important right now, right? I think these buzzwords have been overused, the VUCA world and everything. Maybe we can go a little bit into the research you recently did on that. And maybe you can share some of the most interesting, most striking results from your work there.
Yeah, happily. The one thing is, and by the way, before going into that, so it's really, we see that also in working with the organizations, like on different things, really this kind of, how can you transfer quite fast a strategy into the organization is one of the key topics for that's differentiating in terms of success due to the fact that the environment is changing fast. And that was also one of the major outcomes we saw in the robust leadership study. And we did this over the last 3 years, first really explorative, building up the context, and then more on a quantitative approach. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that was interesting that we were also categorizing along different capabilities from, so how good are we in sensing the environment out there? How good are we transferring what we sense into our organization? And on the other hand, how good are we in building up a culture of trust, a culture of openness and diversity of perspective, a culture of feedback to learn together, a culture in which people can really take accountability, being, you could say, the foundation of a successful implementing of a strategy into the organization. Mm-hmm. And when we were going into that, the interesting thing that we saw is that the organizations or the participants coming from really different industries, that you could say 10% of the participants said, okay, we don't have the right capabilities in this environment. So we are in danger basically of losing out. 10% said we have a great company. Mm-hmm. We are really set up for success also in a very dynamic environment. But the major part, roughly 80%, said, well, we do some things. You know, we are good, in some we are really bad. And as you just said, there are some things that are taken for granted. And we did also workshops on that topic. And one major outcome of the workshop was that managers from different industries said all the same thing. Mm-hmm. That if pressure comes up, you go back to your hierarchical structures. Mm-hmm. So you might implement agile methodologies, new methods, trying to be more adaptive. And then when pressure comes up, especially from the financial side, you just go to the classical decision structure, and you go back to silos, and you go back to your term sheets. And so there are things that were really sticking out in terms of a challenge for the companies, and especially the big companies out there.
Yeah.
If they want to adapt more. And the outcome was that this 80% have a little bit of problem because they, you know, it's like stuck in the middle. You have the feeling, oh, we're doing something, so we are good underway. But on the other side, they know that things are lacking. Mm-hmm. That's obviously dangerous because you can have a good feeling that we are already on the way. But if you're missing out on core components, obviously, or core capabilities, then in the long run, it's not functioning because you don't have a comprehensive approach, but just some parts that make you feel good, but actually you are not able to really adapt fast. So this was something, a key outcome for me, I would say, that there's a major risk there for many companies on that. The other part was that it was a lot about using tensions or handling tensions. So that for in this dynamic environment, it's very much more about balancing tensions. It's much more a dynamic view on organization that came out of it, where you could say, okay, perhaps we focus this year more on that part that will bring us as an organization in a different place.
Can you mention a couple of those tensions, right? I think it's about acknowledging that it's not just ambiguity, but by design tensions that you constantly have to sort of like balance out.
Handle.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely. So the first one that came out was, you could say, the stability versus agility. On the one hand, as leader, you need to really provide the orientation for the company where you want to go. So if you change everything the whole time, then there's a lot of uncertainty. It's not predictable for employees. You create insecurity, and with that, you lose performance. So you have to have the methodologies and the ability as a leader also to provide orientation for your company where you're going. On the same side, you need to be able to adapt. So this puts a tension on you because you say, okay, we need to change and be open for what's happening out there. Still, we need to give the guideline. And this is something that especially we see on the, you could say, the what and the why side, right? So what are we doing and why is it important what we're doing, while on the same side being able to adapt. So that's the first one that we're seeing. The second one is culture versus strategy. Culture versus strategy. Why? Because if you say we want to go in a certain direction and we have a sound strategy and we are really focused on the content, on the same side as a leader, you need to focus on, okay, so how do I build up a team? What is the real the culture we want to build? Do we have the real feedback processes? Am I really looking at how we are working together in the best way? And this needs time and energy allocated. And that's also something that we see in a lot of discussions with leaders, that when pressure is building up, everybody knows culture eats strategy for lunch or for breakfast, and the other way around. But when pressure comes up, the culture part is neglected very often. It's really about executing, and especially in the Corona working environment now, we see in lots of talks with companies that systems are overheating, people are going back to the office, but you still have the Corona calendar, which is one meeting back to back. So if you're not looking on that, you will burn out people, you will lose people, you will lose the talent market. So in the mid run, you just will lose your edge and your advantage. So you have to handle that both. And also you could say, when you're developing a strategy, you have always a change process at the same time. Because we are in a fast environment, you don't have the time to develop a strategy over a year, then implement it over 2 years, and then go into the next round. So you have to make it more participatory, more fluent. You could say a strategy process is always a more or less good change process and cultural program, and a cultural program should always be a strategy process as well. as you also in WorkPath, being really this integrative approach to teams, when you look at OKRs, there's the power. You have to be more, it has to be more one thing than separated ones. So there's a tension in handling that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's where we perfectly connect in also the context of everything you said, understanding that not just the old approaches to strategy development and strategy deployment, but also strategy execution and what is a strategy, what is the value of a strategy to it, that is changing, right? A 5-year strategy is probably less valuable than it was 20 or 30 years ago. And what's while long-term strategies and their impact decrease in value, the need for constant strategic thinking and strategic behavior everywhere in the organization, not just at the top, is so much more important, right? So I think that there we come back to what leaders have to do and what leadership skills everyone needs, not just managers. What kind of capabilities do you need to inject and develop on all levels of the organization in all teams so you can actually react fast? And I really like how you described this, because I think that sometimes also when we come together with organizations that are in the early days of a major transformation, I think a lot of employees, a lot of colleagues there think, okay, we have to get agile. That's where we want to be, right? But that's actually not the case. The highest form of a high performing organization today is one that can regulate, right? You mentioned that these tensions, and I always described it as a spectrum or different dimensions of spectrums, where depending on the environment, you might go more into stable. You might have to go a little bit more into top down and focus on efficiency. And when the environment changes again, you sort of like shift back. Yeah. So the ability of an organization to adjust not just what are our priorities and how do we contribute to our strategy on a day to day, on a weekly, on a monthly, on a quarterly basis, but also what kind of style, what kind of like leadership, what ways of collaboration do we need? That's something that has to be adjusted more frequently. And I think then, exactly as you said, every change process is a strategic process. Every strategy process is a change process. Those two things are so close together today. There's a lot of work to be done in that context. I think that's something we can probably agree on. You just mentioned it in like a sentence, the role of OKRs and if we look at it a bit broader, an outcome mindset, outcome centricity is important. What is the role of that in all of the context and how do you look at it?
So in terms of, so when we are also, when we go into a project, we often say, okay, let's go backward, start with the objective, then look at the process, and then look at the information you need to start. So not the IPO information process output, but going backwards, the OP, which is nice in Germany, actually. And when we look at the role of that, I think, and what I feel also with working, I just had recently, beginning of the year, a workshop in the pharmaceutical industry with a big medical section. And it was really that the discussion we had was really, it's so important to have the objectives clear for the year and then start in transferring. And I guess that's also where the complexity starts, and that's really something that leaders recognize now. So I would say outcome management is really becoming a key topic for organizations, because everybody says, and I also think that last year, 2 years of Corona made something there, that organizations were really readjusting for the last 2 years. And now, okay, now we start, we need to implement. We are now in terms of implementing. We had our thoughts, how we handle the situation, how we go forward, and now we need to implement. And realizing that when you're adapting when you're adapting on a leadership level, how do we get people on board? how do we get people along the line that they have a good overview where you're heading and really engaging with the organization? And I think that's where we are at the moment, that leaders and organizations realize that outcome management is key to be successful. And they realize the high complexity. And with that comes now a lot of questions. So how can we work with our leaders that they're good equipped? And how can we reinsure that we don't lose our employees, especially if we are in a phase that is highly agile and we are adapting again and again and again, because we are sending our KPIs or our lead and lag measures out there in the environment. And we say, okay, we need to adapt and adapt and adapt. But going two or three levels down the line, how do we ensure that people don't get confused and that we don't lose them? And I guess at the moment we are in a phase where organizations start to build up proficiency there, that they're getting more professional about that and building these capabilities. How can we translate that? But it's a completely different kind of, you could say, skill set for leaders to think in that way and think this outcome is, because it's more complex, it's more adaptable. Yeah.
And it requires capabilities. It starts with consciousness, awareness, but then capabilities, proficiency, as you call it, on two levels of what I call strategy content and strategy process, right? Behavior. It, I think, oftentimes starts with what is an outcome. Yeah, awareness for who are our stakeholders, who is our customer, and what kind of value do we want to create? I think we meet with a lot of leadership teams, a lot of organizations where they have an abundance of goals and projects and initiatives, and they do have goals, but it's that blurry clutter of KPIs, financial metrics, things they want to do, and not really a disciplined and distinctive approach to, okay, outcome. That's about value. It's about value for a certain kind of stakeholder group, internal or external. It's about customer centricity, ultimately. And a good strategy should define what value do we provide to the marketplace in a differentiated manner, and how, to some extent, maybe. And that's strategy content. It's something where not every company already has that clear structure. They have strategy clutter, but not strategy structure around outcomes. And then strategy content to strategy process, as you just said, I think earlier you call it a more participatory strategy and strategy approach, where teams actually continuously engage with the strategy. And I think in a certain sandbox, in a certain frame, also have the autonomy to adapt and reinterpret, reevaluate on a regular basis. What do we have to do right now? What can we do based on learnings from the last months to make these outcomes happen? We might have less top-down direction and mandate for what we do and how we do it, but the outcomes are crystal clear. And we as a team, we have the capabilities and the autonomy to work towards these outcomes. So massive change and a massive change effort and learning effort, something I think that never stops, because as we said earlier, you go a little bit within the spectrum, right? Sometimes you are more autonomous, more we figure out how we do it. And then if the environment changes, if certain organizational factors change, maybe you go more into a top-down mode for some time again. So I think that's why this is so interesting and challenging and then new for a lot of managers who've been successful in a different culture or based on very different skills. That's super interesting. Do you have maybe some, to come towards the end already, some examples, what you've seen working with companies? What are good practices, bad practices when launching a new strategy process or when launching a strategy in general? Like maybe some high-level stories that you can share.
So the one was, I guess, a story that's already some years back, actually working in the automotive sector. And there we, a new strategy in the IT department, right? 4,000 mm-hmm. people coming about. Mm-hmm. And what really worked nice in the implementation was that they set up in their IT center, just in the open space where also the visitors can enter, there was basically a workshop room there that was open on the top. So if you entered the building, everybody going to the first floor could look down and see that there was this space for talking about and understanding the strategy. And actually, it was really an approach going for 3 months that all the teams went into this workshop space and were discussing, so what does the strategy mean for us? So over 10 different strategic fields going to a new direction, and then really finding out, so we are in this, we are in there, and that's our part in it, having this discussion. And as this was taking place during the day, so it was not a closed up strategy work somewhere. It was not hidden away in a space nobody could touch and see. But it was so separated that the information was not going out in terms of security, etc. But it was very clear there's an open talk, and the whole organization was seeing that this was an important topic. And people were reflecting, so what's our part in the strategy? And in terms of values, so what do we need in our team to be aware of to be successful in terms of implementing this strategy? So this was a really nice example how you can spin also in terms of making it explicit that strategy implementation and development and talk is part of how the organization is rolling regularly, right?
A strong symbol, right? And as humans, sometimes we really need those physical experiences, in that case, to experience strategies for all of us. And we all have to act strategically. We're all invited to engage. So I really like that example. Yeah, it's not always just about communications or digital spaces, but really making it experience in that way. So, as always, and with all guests, we have some closing questions that we ask everyone on the Major Outcomes podcast. And we start with books, book recommendations. Are there any books that you recently might have read and that might be relevant to our audience in the context of what we talked about today, or in general, the context of your work and what interests you?
So one book I really liked and just reread lately, Dare to Lead by Brené Brown. Really like that one, because it has like different aspects of leadership, but also vulnerability being at the center. So really being also something that we see also in terms of the studies more and more, that this kind of different kind of authentic leadership being needed. And then the five dysfunctionalities of teams being also a really nice book. It's a story, you could say. But if you go on the value side, how you work together, there's a lot of truth in it. So this is also a book that I can highly recommend. And then there are others
Great
like
classic,
Radical
yeah.
Candor being also really nice, because this is like you could say it's about tension, right? Radical Candor talking about feedback on the one hand, being really supportive for the other person, on the other hand, being really clear in the content. This is also about handling tension to work together better. And you can take that from an individual level to an organization level and say, how human-centered are we in organization? How good are we in looking at our employees? And on the other hand, how good are we in implementing content?
So we'll put that into the show notes or these books and links. Podcasts. Do you listen to podcasts? Do you have any recommendations in that space?
I have to think about that actually.
No worries.
So
Then
I had.
we'll edit later. Not a problem.
Yes.
And then actually the last question already, if our listeners want to find more about you and your work, if they want to engage with you, what's the best way to do that?
So one thing is happily, obviously, just contact me on LinkedIn. That would be a direct, or we can put also the link to our website of the IICM, and you can find us there quite easily. So if you want to connect, always welcome.
Perfect. So we will definitely put those into the show notes. We will put also a link to the research we talked about earlier into the show notes for whomever in the audience who wants to dive a little bit deeper and engage with us. And that's it already, Felix. Thank you very much for your time. Thanks for being on the Major Outcomes podcast. And then I hope we can continue our conversation very soon.
Johannes, thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for tuning in today. If you found this episode valuable, please subscribe to the Major Outcomes podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other major platform you might be using. Also, we'd be excited if you'd leave us a review. This helps us grow the community and spread the outcome mindset. See you on the next episode.